Glória a Deus,
Thank you for saying that.
que hacer algo. Material transformation. Vishva Surit of the first of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a friend to everyone. Sakasha of you, the friend. Samina, because of your mental equilibrium. Vita Adamate, who has completely forsaken the bodily concept of life. Tava, your Api, indeed. Mahatmanat, of insulting, a great devotee. Swakitat, from my own activity. He, certainly. Madhik, a person like me. Manchanti would be destroyed. Adiyat, very soon. Api, certainly. Sulapani, even though as powerful as Lord Shiva. Sulapani, translation. Oh, my dear Lord, you are the friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Maharaj Rabhudana speaking to Chakra. You are the friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the friend of all living entities. You are therefore equal to everyone, and you are free from the bodily conception. Although I have committed an offense by insulting you, I know that there is no loss or gain for you due to my insult. You are fixed in your determination. But I have committed an offense. Because of this, even though I may be as strong as Lord Shiva, I shall be vanquished without delay due to my offense at the lotus feet of Vaishnava. This is repeated many times. We repeat it every day. Oh, my dear Lord, you are the friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the friend of all living entities. You are therefore equal to everyone, and you are free from the bodily conception. Although I have committed an offense by insulting you, I know that there is no loss or gain for you due to my insult. You are fixed in your determination. But I have committed an offense. Because of this, even though I may be as strong as the Shiva, I shall be vanquished without delay due to my offense at the lotus feet of Vaishnava. Maharaj Yamuna was very intelligent and conscious of the inauspicious effects arising from insulting the Vaishnava. He was therefore very anxious to be excused by that thought. Following in the footsteps of Maharaj Yamuna, everyone should be very cautious not to commit an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, chapter 13, says, Sulatani sama yari bhakta vidha kari bhagavata kamana bhavati smira lampari vina vashnavari mukti sattvatari Satana, Anta, Hata, Sarva, Sastrikai. Even if one is as strong as Lord Shiva, to carry the trident in his hand, one will nonetheless fall down from his spiritual position if he tries to insult the Vaishnava. That is the verdict of all the scriptures. He also says in the Chaitanya Bhagavata, chapter 22, Vaishnava Munda Kavodaya Vana Tarakshya Samadhi Naika Konajana Sulapani Samayari Vaishnava Mundu Tathavida Masaya Kai Shastra Mundu Then the blessings of Vaishnav cannot be protected by anyone, even if a person is as strong as Lord Shiva. If he blasphemes a Vaishnav, he is sure to be destroyed. This is the verdict of all Shastras. If one does not care for the verdict of the Shastras and dares blaspheme a Vaishnav, he suffers life after life because of this. This is about to be on the fifth verse of the fifth canto, 10th chapter, which we will dive upon the title of the discussion between Judge Bhatta and Maharaj Rupa. So, talking about offenses is very tricky for someone like me, with a lot of offenses. It's a heavy statement here, and here's a heavy statement to start things off on. I want to remind all the Maharaji Vaishnavas that we're now featuring Srimad Bhagavatam classes by ladies once a week. That will be tomorrow. Some on Tuesdays. Some of our senior ladies are offering support and instruction for those willing to perform the service. Please contact me by email or Ashunok. You should participate, if at all possible. Remembering the Srila Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in the food of Krishna. We are talking about offenses, and I will mention that some devotees are offended, actually, by the idea of ladies giving Bhagavatam class. In fact, some devotees are situated in the mode of ignorance. Another fact is that some devotees are, well, it's a fact, actually, that people are offended. I have to skip these classes, otherwise you get nothing. Anyways, that's a fact. Some devotees are actually offended by those giving class. You can't hear? Sorry. It's a fact that some devotees are actually offended by those giving class. And also some devotees is a fact that they're situated in their ignorance. I hope you ladies and gentlemen would all be encouraged and supportive of this effort to endeavor to catch up with society's world headquarters in my field. With the rest of our worldwide society. These classes by ladies will offer another perspective on the truths of the Bhagavatam. Please note, we have as one of Srila Prabhupada's first books, The Teachings of Queen Kunti. The Teachings of Queen Kunti. The ladies are allowed to teach. Srila Prabhupada emphasizes women, a pure devotee, regardless of the fact that she was a woman. He emphasizes, he could have ignored this whole section of the Bhagavatam, he could have deemed it unimportant, he could have rushed over it, but instead he chose to publish an individual separate book with elaborate paperwork given in public in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavatam classes, to emphasize the value of a woman's preaching, the value of this man's preaching efforts. He knew how to engage everyone in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada was expert. And today, unfortunately, those who deny this opportunity to women, or to the young, or perhaps even eventually to Ravana Maharaja, Westerners, is simply not in line with our Prabhupada, not in line with our Bhakti Siddhanta Prabhupada, or our Srila Prabhupada. Well, this is important. The understanding that an offense can be a deviation from an established philosophy. An offense is not just that I insult you or I make a trick you or something, steal your money. That's not the kind of offense we want to talk about at this point. But we're asking everyone not to deviate from what Srila Prabhupada presented. It's most offensive to deviate and minimize Acharya's teachings. But to speak of his examples, in effect saying they are not dated. Now, we are more advanced and we can disregard his example at that time, the beginning of our movement. I have information for everyone that we are still in a very teeny, tiny movement. In the scope of all the organizations in the world, we are very, very, very small. change the world, get refreshed, just like that. That was the desire of the demoniac governments. We will never outgrow through the prophet's instructions and example. This is our concern, to spread Krishna consciousness, how to do it. One devotee said, by not enlisting the limit in this preaching effort, as we used to do, and this is what very, very successful, we are shooting ourselves in the foot. But a man and a woman are like 2 feet. You can imagine like that. If one of them is lame or not used, then you have to hop around on the other foot. It's not very attractive. Nobody wants to join that kind of movement, a one-legged movement. So be pleased for your own good in your spiritual life. See what Prabhupada wanted. Don't fictionalize another contradictory conclusion. Don't deny Srila Prabhupada the place of Acharya, replacing him with our own concoctions in his society. Better you go to the forest, consult your own society. It is offensive, very deviant, and it will ruin your spiritual life if you try to supplant our founder Acharya's teachings on this issue. So you're suffering. Now we get to the class. That was my announcement. So we're suffering the results of our past misdeeds, our karma. But we're getting only a tidbit in relation to the suffering. If you might relieve, I'm sorry, you didn't know yet. I should have pointed it. We're getting only a tidbit in relation to the suffering we deserve for our sinful mistakes. One definition of sin is ignoring God's laws, injuring others and ourselves in the process of ignoring God. God's laws is sinful. Unfortunately for devotees, devotional service destroys all the reactions for our sinful and pious actions. We're free. However, this verse is telling us the offenses we commit against devotees while we are eradicating our karma stay with us birth after birth. Birth after birth means that we do not pass go, we remain in jail. You know, monopoly, you know that game, it's a go point, a starting point. Then you can be sent to jail. You have to sit and miss a turn or miss 3 turns like that. It's very, very bad game. But we don't want to do that. We don't want to remain in the prison of material life where you experience repeated births and deaths, birth after birth. This is not our goal. So this is a caveat. It's a wonderful opportunity we have to destroy our karma and go back to Godhead. There's a caveat. You cannot do this. You must be very careful. To think that I can misuse devotees' energy, misuse devotees, abuse devotees, etc., and still return to Krishna just because I'm chanting, this is what a sin against the, this is an offense against the chanting of the holy name. And we don't want to commit that offense. Well, for another controversial point, if we fear being stuck on the path back home, you may wonder, shouldn't we, why wouldn't we all be better off if we acted like the offenses right off? What if we just never spoke? What if we acted deaf, dumb, and blind, avoiding all manner of infraction or interaction with other living entities, by acting as a man, animal, or a lady animal? These things happen. I had a friend, actually, it's interesting, I had this friend with their family, and she had a son, and their son didn't speak until he was 11 years old. He just didn't speak. And then, all of a sudden, he came out, she took him to doctors, and they examined, and said, there's nothing wrong with his phonics, or his, his tongue, he's completely capable of speaking. But he just didn't speak. So, one day at the breakfast table, he came out with a 11-grade sentence. You know, perfectly composed, perfectly grammatical, and even had the words in it. And she said she fainted. She actually fainted completely. So this happens, actually, that people do remove themselves. This is one of the characteristics of the autistic children. They remove themselves from too much stimulation. Can't deal with it. So, to some extent or another, his son just decided not to talk, and he didn't, and then finally he decided to talk. So for us, is it better for us in this age if we, as Srila Prabhupada requested, all cooperate in a mature manner? In other words, speak to each other, encourage each other, give each other suggestions, give each other service. Is that better? And this is this means a large part of becoming, in large part, this means becoming offensive to all devotees. And that's very tricky, it's difficult, because they're offended so easily. This means communicating with each other openly, honestly, not cheating, without maliciousness, without pretension, without trying to control each other for the ego gratification from it. That happens sometimes. See, that's happening. We have to be very careful. Right now, she said, those addicted to sex have not experienced the loving power and control. So right now was Mao Zedong's wife, and she was also the leader in China in that particular period. And after he passed away, she and several other people tried to take over the entire government and become dictators. And this was her idea, that if you really want to experience a high, you know, get power and control, it's much more exciting than sex life, much more adventurous and pleasing. But this is our situation in material life. We're trying to exert this. We've come here out of a desire to enjoy, out of a desire to glory over material nature, glory over each other. So this is a tall order. Don't offend anyone. This is hard. It's not easy. Because that tendency to glory over, that tendency to control, the tendency to be on top of every situation is always there. We do that sometimes by being boisterous and pushing, or we do it by withdrawing. So this is the question, was withdrawing? Was that bona fide? Was that the right thing for him to do? Just imagine he's acting like a madman. And this presents an interesting question. Is it bad to act like this when you're not actually mad? Is that fair? Think of the frustration, the distress he caused his father, shame he caused his mother, the anxiety, embarrassment he caused his siblings. Our family members now are retarded. Just imagine that. It's not always a real plus. We don't relish that kind of fame or reputation. So, John Barat, you could say, well, he may have offended his family members. His father worked so very hard to teach him, instructing, but he was unsuccessful. Well, I'm reminded of a situation, this distress, perhaps much like what many of us caused our family when we became devotees. It's a fact that many of us disturbed some of our family members. You know, I did. Well, I'm reminded of a lady many of you may know. Ratna Ranjini, she's a Scottish lady, she's married to one devotee, and she was in the British ashram when I was there. And she was the same, really. We're most fortunate to have her in our society. Everyone she met considered to be a saint. And so I used the term most sincerely and reverently. I had several chances to have devotional service dealings with her when I was far more passionate than I am now. And with my rough passion itself, she was always very patient and considerate. So much in the world of goodness, and very chaste. She used to pin her side on her face, and it was a little comic. Some of the ladies thought it was a little funny. But she was so chaste. And when ladies are chaste, when women are chaste, they get what they want from men. And what do they want? What does that fit them? They want respect. You know that song, R-E-S-P-E-C-T? Tell you what it means to me. They want respect. And why not? And proposals of marriage, of course. But they have to be changed. They have to get those things. It was inspiring to see her going on about many different services selflessly absorbed in her service to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. She always had her hand on the keyboard. She was always audibly chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare. A very humble and very powerful devotee, a sweet mother and a beautiful wife. So Ratnarjini was very admired and appreciated for the chaplain. Then Ratnarjini contracted cancer, a brain tumor, and she left the material world. She died. On her last days, she was in the hospital. She was paid a visit by her mother and sisters. And she was, during her last days, lucid and awake. She was aware. She wasn't comatose. There was another devotee lady staying with her most of the time. Dr. Walters, her own mother, came in, and her sister, and got me, and Jeannie didn't speak. She acted as if she was in a semi-conscious state. The relatives left after an hour or so. She denied them the final goodbye, if I can say. The devotee who was in attendance with her asked her, why didn't she speak to her relatives? She could have done so, and it was not so, she was not so ill, she could not talk and deal with the visitors. So, I'll tell you what she said. She said, sadly, what is the use? They only want to talk about mundane things. She knew they had no interest in Krishna. So we get to this point where we have to divorce ourselves from material association. We have to divorce ourselves from the material world and from those persons who are not interested in pursuing devotional service. And that's what you did. And that's what Jai Brahm did. His father was a karma pandit. His father was interested in elevating him to higher positions in the material world. So like this, that was the situation. He had no choice. He had to avoid. He had to avoid him. So Rahm avoided even her own mother as the death was fast approaching. She simply did not want to perpetuate the mundane relationship he had with him. The relationship she had moved beyond, she moved beyond that relationship. She was actually on a very high platform. There's a whole book about her experiences and her life. And it's very amazing. She was having different visions and so forth. She didn't try to capitalize on these in any way, shape, or form, but they were happening, and they were only revealed after she passed away. She was having a relationship basically with Krishna, and she had moved beyond that. And the family members, they couldn't comprehend this. They couldn't understand this. And the devotees couldn't understand. You could say that Ratanji was pulling a jack by it. She was actually just meditating, saying in person. Another question comes to mind, and she was she offensive in not telling them about Krishna in the last moments of her life, about how she was hoping to go back to Krishna, about what they should do with their lives? Should she have demonstrated her faith in the process she had been following for more than half her life by preaching to them? Or would she feel that having set an example of making her life a surrendered act of devotion, that this is all the preaching she needed to offer them? But we can take shelter of a number of different attitudes on this issue. Take shelter in many different ways. And we can see that our obligation, our first obligation, is to fix our mind on Krishna. Then, if we're powerful enough, if we can preach, if we have the potency, if we see that there is receptivity in others, then we can preach to them. We can try to enlighten them. But is it offensive to us, they say, what Jesus says, don't lay your pearls before swine. Don't preach to people who don't want to hear, who are not interested. Who will simply brush it off. But did she have the right to pull the plug on all her mundane relationships? Kill off her mundane designations as a daughter of this karma and a sister of that karma? It's not terribly sentimental, is it? It's a little shocker, this situation. But it compares to Arjuna's killing his relatives at Krishna's request. That's even a much more challenging idea. Krishna asked him to kill his relatives. Krishna wants us to renounce the material world and our bodily conception of life. That's his objective. That's his objective. That's why we're sent here, to go through body after body after body, to come to the stage of wanting to renounce the material world and wanting to become absorbed in the spiritual world. The devotee has the right to withdraw from the material world and its attractions, illusions, distractions. This is not offensive. We have to leave the so-called emotional comforts and the actual distresses of family life and friends to pursue wholeheartedly pure Krishna consciousness. So that's my first point. All this is my first point. And then I'm trying to make, doing this in a heavy scripted way. I try very hard to make my points work. Sometimes they don't. I'm not gifted anymore in speaking and stuff very nicely. But that's the point. We have this as a bona fide activity to fill in Jack Rock, the name of Jack Rock. We have in our lives, work ashore, that's God's unique business. Like very little patience with people who are not devotees. God says that's God's unique business. God has a good friend, Krishna Das Babaji. Many devotees, I can tell you about Vivekananda, he was a good friend of Krishna Das Babaji. I say friend because he was associating with him regularly. And we used to ask him questions about this and that, political things and so forth. Krishna Das Babaji was just chanting and saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He just absorbed in the Holy Name. And if you say, what good is that? People who are passionate, who want results, they'll say, what good is that? They can't see that. They can't understand that. But that's in our life. Those are Vaishnavas, really Vaishnavas, that do like this. And we can do that too if we're having difficulty following the dictates of our mind or the dictates of authorities. And do that. We submit to the Holy Name and let the Holy Name carry us. This is Krishna's idea that we depend on Him, that we allow Him to take us back to God. It's not that we're going to flex our muscles and pick up the weight, open the doors, open these heavy doors. If you ever think of going, you've been to the Parthenon. They have mirrors there. Parthenon, they're 2,000 years old, cast in bronze. They've never been reset, they never had to be reconstructed. They're just so incredibly heavy, they're about this thick, about 12 or 14 feet tall. And it takes a man a long time to push them, guard them, and open them, and then close them. But that's really nice. And the gates, you can imagine the gates is like something like that. No, actually, it's impossible to open this door. Impossible to go back to God by our own strength, by our own muscle flex, by our own ability. We have to depend on Krishna to open that door. So this is a consideration that we don't want to be offensive. Offensive will keep that door locked. Being offensive will keep that door locked. And getting back to our need for cooperation and responsive participation with each other, to carry on the aspirations of the society's founder, our guru, Mahaguru, Srila Prabhupada, in an offenseless manner. How do we do this? But we need to communicate and not act as though we are in complete ignorance of each other. We're deaf to what we don't want to hear, and blind to what we don't want to see. At a certain point in life, you definitely have a right to divorce ourselves from material relationships, to avoid entering into new mundane relationships, and to free ourselves from the material world with no apologies to anyone. At the same time, we can take shelter in emotional relationships. That's our objective. That's another objective. Prabhupada created a society where people could come together and help each other, associate, and become devotees, become better and better devotees. So this is called when we move away from our attachments. This is called sannyas. And you can be sannyas with or without a bandha and without a bunch of lovers. It's possible. This is a lie, even found to be praiseworthy if we are fixed on Krishna's pleasure, desirous of returning to serve Krishna as he originally intended us to serve him. If we avoid relationships with our own mental pleasure, that's fantasy, eternal fantasies. That is, if we do that, if we avoid those relationships, then we can avoid offenses. Those things may be offensive. We imagine that some person is off and you're on, this person is right, and this person is wrong and you're right. If we're indulging ourselves like that in our minds, it may be offensive. Our spiritual aspirations are not mundane sensual desires. So we have to be very careful how we play within our mind, within our own mind. Avoidance of blind devotees may sometimes appear like sense gratification. But if you give up such associations, it's highly unethical and recommended in the natural instruction. So Maharaj Yahudana has the intelligence to know that a single person. And tell a saintly person when one speaks up, identifies him by his wiser words. to the king was concerned, adding more of an offense, and not, and did not think it wise to simply ignore that he may have offended God Jotham. Even though Jotham was ignoring the whole world up to this time, and acting as an incompetent. But Jehovah did not hold this against him. In other words, he didn't say tit for tat, well, this person is he happens to have been forced to be very sorry, otherwise he's a problem, but maybe that's the means to get off of his thing. No. Marjorie Hogan actually had a great realization, and he enacted that realization by paying his obeisances and begging for forgiveness. So, when in association with devotees, we need to be very careful. The etiquette is very important, as Kavanaugh Kavanaugh spoke the other day. Client saw this class, and Lord Chaitanya insisted on it. He insisted, in fact, the case, that he paid very great respects to the Vaishnavas. Now, on the other side of the offense question is the act of taking offense. Kavanaugh Kavanaugh once said, in the beginning of my devotional life, I attended the class that he gave, he had just taken some class. And he was saying, if you take offense, then you are offensive. And this is the other side of the offense issue. And so, and we see that Jai was not offended. He was beyond it. And Jai tells him, I see that you're not disturbed by this. This means nothing to you. You're not in any kind of difficulty because of this. But I have made a great mistake. I made a great mistake. And I have to apologize for that. So, if someone criticizes me for being so critical, which I often am, I get all excited and emotional inside. But I don't take offense. I calm down and I criticize my own criticism. I don't try to counterattack. I have to think about it. I think about it and I feel, is it deserved? Is it true? You know, have I made a mistake? Maybe my critic is right. Usually, he is to some extent. And I need to relax a little bit, step back for myself. So, is this, but is it critical? I mean, is a critic necessarily an offender? Is a critic necessarily an offender? Is a critic, is a critic to ignore what he considers wrong, some wrongdoing in our society for fear of making offense? Not if we're convinced that Krishna and Srila Prabhupada want an orderly, well-managed, honestly run society. But we have the obligation within our society to correct the wrong. Every individual has his things he does wrong. Some things we do may offend others. And if we're told about this, then we can correct it. If we're not told about it, in other words, a critic doesn't come forward and say this is wrong, we think everything's all right. Well, this example, we call a thief. A thief, he's naturally offended. He's very disturbed. Right? So he's saying that this. And then we call red-handed. Then he will say, I'm not a thief. I just found this. Like this. So he will be offended. But there's some kinds of offenses that can't be avoided. If one wants to support the righteous cause. If a thief is wrong, take offense. Is the thief wrong to take offense? Yes, he should correct his ways. But that's usually unlikely. There generally has to be some enforcer of justice and righteousness to make things right, keep the thief within bounds. The thief sees only the benefits of stealing. Being less intelligent, he feels that he can cheat others and get away with it, like karma. These types of sins can be erased by chanting Hare Krishna. Isn't that nice? You can be a thief and you can steal. But you can't steal on the strength of chanting. You can't cheat. You can't sin on the strength of chanting. But when one cheats Krishna and is pure devotee, the thief creates an offense. It's not just a sin, but it's an offense. And if that's not removed, or if that is not removed even by chanting Hare Krishna, the Well, that's a very serious situation. There's something that actually the Holy Name has greater focus about that. We have to be extremely careful. We learn about this in the list of offenses against the Holy Name. There's an offense to sin on the strength of charity. So offending a devotee is not an easy thing to erase from our record. It requires a sincere change of heart. So some things that may be expert in so many different things, polite, capable, talented, so on. But that doesn't mitigate, doesn't cancel the fact that they are thieves. But I know I'm American, I see so many thieves in America, stealing the whole country, hijacking the whole country, removing rights that people have. Misappropriating huge amounts of tax dollars for wars and so many things, neglecting education, and so on. But you may say, when we criticize, try to see my good qualities, and you think the thieves. Okay, so I have any good qualities. Look, I'm doing this, I'm giving charity. The mafia is famous for giving so much money to charity. They have to steal so much money, they have to get rid of it somehow, so they give them charity. So they want credit for that. But actually, how do they originally give money? But this is one thing to consider. Why would we do nothing ourselves officially if we see the wrong things going on, if we see theft going on and so forth, if we see mistakes? Why we can't do anything officially, and Krishna has given them control, we do have some authorities that we can appeal to. So it is not an offense to make an appeal to authority. It's not an offense to point out the concerns of of yourself or anyone else. So we're going to stop with that. So running over, I don't really agree with the close at 8:15 or 8:45, but I have this on the fence. Anyway, I'll stop here. If there's any questions or arguments, you can entertain them. If anyone has time. Right. How do you find someone that not even... That's why they should speak up. That's a good idea, they speak up. You know what you're doing for me is offensive. I'm sorry, but I have to tell you. Could you please do something else? So that's a difficult thing, confronting our offenses. you must be prepared not to step off at you and say, well, you know, you really offend me by doing this. So we put ourselves on the line when we engage in presenting. Our disturbance. It's like Prabhupada, he avoided being disturbed by anything. He just didn't allow himself to be disturbed. And that's one way of going. But in the other sense, we're dealing with a society and we have to maintain it for the sake of the pleasure of our spiritual transformation. We have to try to protect it. That's our business as a bunch of modifiers. Not to just be completely aloof from the modifiers. But to actually participate in the process of social reformation, forming ourselves and a larger group of people like ourselves, and then ultimately a larger group of people all over the world. No interest, perhaps even no interest in Christian consciousness. Any questions or comments? Well, you can avoid those persons, or you can try to help them. Depending on your ability and the experience you have, or you can appeal to someone who you think may be able to help them. I had a friend once who went insane, and he did this before he knew it. He was getting more and more unbalanced. So a group of his friends got together and they said, you know, I think that's right. So finally, we really need to go and have a rest. We need to go to an asylum, to a sanctuary, and you need to have a rest because you're acting very erratically. It's not going to work out. We, as your friends, we all love you, appreciate you, love all the good qualities, but we're doing this thing that's going to lead you into a big campus. So Ron was shocked. Ron was shocked. But I took it because of the good intention, because of the concerns that were shown to me. This is the complete Bible that I was devoted. I took it that they were serious and they were concerned. And so I took their advice and I admitted myself. And he got some help. He got some self-knowledge from them. And he was approved. He said, get out of that situation, get out of the hospital, and resume a normal life. And he told me the thing that hung him up, that really caused him the most difficulty when he was in his bad state, was thinking that he was completely unique. Completely different from everyone else. Actually, we are all just like everybody else. We all have the same problems, the same fears and anxieties. That's a fact. So he got over that hump and then he was able to relate to his family. That's what he was. Yeah. He's a very, very nice person. I was actually on the streets of New York. I had no place to stay. And I called him up. I had a name. His name is Ron Gold. I called him up. I had another man's name. And I didn't know how to get a phone number, actually. So I called him up. That's his man. Somebody had told me that he was a writer. And he wrote a paper thing. And he had his, somehow I got his number. I got this number. And I said, Ron, how's Alan? You know, my friend Alan was his close friend. And he said, who's Alan? Anyway, he actually invited me to his apartment, took care of me, gave me food, you know, shelter, and so forth. I got back to my parents, got my shelter, my child, my children. But he took me basically off the street, gave me shelter. This is very nice. Well, this is amazing. He was like a reformed person after he had his mental breakdown. So we've had our mental breakdown. We've had our psychosis and material development, our psychotic episode. And now we're in the hospital, and now we're improving, and now we have to become like that, generous, anxious to help others, ready to serve. And it's not easy. Amongst ourselves, though, relationships should be really, really complicated. It is so difficult. It's just really complicated. And that's not easy, but if you're offended, if someone's offending you, you know, try to straighten it out. Try to work on it.
Should be a way to professional association to just to stay in the room.
Should we avoid what?
To go out to associate with myself and to just stay at home to travel as
well. Well, there's so many ways that you can recover or reorganize a difficulty. You're having difficulty with a certain person, you can go to a friend's. A person's friend and say, you know, I'm having this difficulty and I don't want to have this difficulty. I want to feel, you know, open and transparent with this person. I don't want private animosity. And so then that person can be an intermediary for you and he can go and he or she can go and speak to that person. You know, so and so is having this difficulty and you should try to work it out. A meeting can be arranged. In other words, don't let these things fester. If every time you see this person, you're thinking bad thoughts and you're making offenses in your own mind, just give that up. Give it up. But you may need help to do that. You may have to help give you some other person to help. If you just avoid, if you do like drive by, then that's okay too. But if you do that, you have to really be fixed on Krishna. You have to really not want to deal with anything material. You have to really be totally committed to being a Christian devotee in the sense of that's all there is for you, just Christian. And of course, there's going to be this situation over here and this situation over here completely different. You personally, myself personally, we have some friends and we have some enemies. Father was asked by the reporter once, he says, why do so many people dislike what you're doing? He promised that you need to have no enemies. That's the report. Do you have no enemies? Everybody has enemies. Everybody has people that turn them off. Maybe the planets, the magnetism, the enemies, all the people that turn you off because you're attracted to it. You like it. To be with those forces. So this is going on. Now, how do we deal with it in such a way that we don't just indulge ourselves with those forces we enjoy being with and we discard and maybe even negate and maybe chastise unfairly those forces we don't enjoy? This is a balance that pure devotees can strike in their life. Because, why? Because they're sheltered, they've been sheltered by Krishna. In a spiritual way, everyone's very, very copacetic, everyone's very complimentary with each other because they realize that this person is pleasing Krishna. It's like Radharani's mother, she's very anxious to catch Radharani and Krishna together, and she's a man's sister-in-law, and she's a mother-in-law, and all that stuff. But they don't just try, well, you've got to get rid of these people. These people are really messing everything up. No, this is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's arrangement. You know, we want to take these people out of life or out of life with the Goku or take them out. Just a second, if I come to this. No, that's not the attitude. The attitude is these people are giving Krishna pleasure, we really tolerate, we really appreciate, and go along with it. In other words, if you're in a play, if you're in a play and this person over here is a demon and this person is a good person, this person is called Krishna, you both respect each other. This is the play. So when we see things like that, what does it show? It says all the world is a play, and all the world is a stage, and you're the actors on it. So like that, when we see that, how do you want to act in your position? You can give way to your senses and act in such a way that you're, inimical, angry, upset, frustrated. Or you can see it as a play and see Krishna's testing me. He wants to see what attitude I'm going to have. Do you have a self-centered attitude or appreciate that this person is a devotee and I should be very respectful of this person. I should not offend this person. It depends on our attitudes.
It's probably more expensive. If you take offense, you become offensive. Because I was thinking, you have in the scriptures some examples. You are illustrating, for example, the Rasa took offense and actually giving very offensive words and those words. But also, we have examples where offense was taken by the person they were not offensive. For example, sages, for example, by this very domestic Islamic boys, they took offense. Yeah. They made the first advice of the discussion that they had in the public, but I think 3 years after doing that, I think that they were not offensive.
It's physical sometimes. The offenses get physical. The comment is, you know, whatever happens, the idea is, whatever happens to me, Krishna's arranged. If I get slapped, you know, if I get criticized, if I get shot down, I had something happen to me here in my life, it was very, very upsetting. I really got destroyed in a sense. I could have been destroyed. I could take shelter in Krishna and save me. But the idea is, things happen to us, and if we don't take shelter of Krishna, then we're in trouble. And if we do take shelter of Krishna, we see how to deal with it. So I dealt with it in different ways. I renounced the whole issue. I tried to forget it. I couldn't forget it. So then I started to address the issue. And I went through a lot of different things. And maybe in the course of going through a lot of different things and complaining, criticizing, maybe I made offenses. But maybe things will be resolved. At the same time, I took it as an illness as a game because I thought, well, I'm being offended here. I don't think it's right. So maybe other people are also being offended, and that's not right. So I'll make an effort to correct the situation and see what can be done. And it turns out that, maybe it'll be correct. It's just, what's happening to us in our life is not really very important. The actual things that happen, traffic accident, or the wife leaves, or the husband leaves, or these things are not really important. It's how we take them. It's how we address the issue. We let it drive us to madness, or do we consult and become victimhood of goodness? Does it drive us closer to Krishna? Do these bad things that happen to us, do they drive us closer to Krishna? Or is it, about the food, the rice that wasn't satisfied with the food, you're getting a few grains of rice, and there's a huge plate in each pile. So like this, the grace of how we take it, she's not ashamed, he was chastised, not what I've seen from the grace of chariot, he became anxious because someone else is going to chastise if he wasn't. So if we seek out, if we're chastised or we're put down or we're destroyed as to whatever happens to us, if we can see that this is Krishna's arrangement for our purification, then we can tolerate it. Because whatever Krishna wants, the gopis, they'll take the dust of Krishna, their feet, and give it to Krishna. Oh, we got to tell that story. Oh, I have to be embarrassed, I have to be disgraced, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to be chastised. That's all right. Krishna's doing it. But when we see like that, when we're actually Krishna conscious, we see Krishna's doing everything that's happened to us, then it's, then we actually have arrived at a certain platform that's very, very comfortable. It's very wonderful. We no longer, we can get over our disturbance. We may be momentarily disturbed, but if we reflect what's going on, why is Krishna doing this thing? Oh, I have to pay some debt. Accept it. Remember, this is like a pinprick. All of our difficulties in this lifetime are a pinprick compared to what we're deserving karmically. If we continue on in our birth after birth pattern, in our samsara pattern, we fly the plane in our holding pattern, we continue on like that. And coming here to India, I had an opportunity to be in a small plane. And the pilot had left the door open to the airplane. So actually, I could see when he landed, what was happening. If the plane is going this, small plane is going like this, coming into the runway. And a little bit of jerky here, a little bit of wind blowing there, like this. I'm not experienced with flying airplanes, so it's a quite new experience. But like that, once you become experienced, the pilots are like, they're having a great time. They're not going to enjoy it. They're playing, especially the fun. But like that, we become a pilot that we can handle these things. And Prabhupada had so many difficulties in his life. Even he established this big movement all over the world. People were falling down, people were running off in other directions, schisms were happening, people were going to go to panic. So many problems he had to deal with. He was in anxiety, so I can't sleep at night. So how did he deal with it? He took it as Krishna. So we're not gonna solve all our problems if we're in a comfortable situation with all the rest of the life, but we don't have to be devotees. That's not what we resolve the problem with the devotees. The result would be that we take on more of our anxiety condition. And that is if you have that perspective, you can experience the ecstasy of doing that. At the same time, you're feeling the difficulty of doing that. The Prabhupada is an ecstasy of these problems. This was the fruit, these problems were the fruit of his coming to America and spreading Krishna consciousness to thousands of people. That was the fruit. How do we understand that? We can't understand it unless you're actually in love with Krishna and whatever he does. That's his best application. easier said than done. I think you should start. I think it's a fun question. Yeah, it's amazing.
So how does this one take it because...
Well, I'm surprised that I'm still here in many respects. I can appreciate that. I don't know how it goes on. We had Ron DeVoe in Elantra, who's extremely critical of so many things. Amazing guy. Famous artist. Some of you may know. But anyways, everybody wonders, how are you coming down just to do this? But at the same time, what he says, many of the things that he says, his complaints against devotees are not personal disturbance. He's talking about what they're doing against the Prabhupada's movement. He's talking about how they're affecting the Prabhupada's movement. And so, that kind of, as Maharaj was saying, we don't have to worry so much about Prabhupada's criticism. If I make a personal attack on someone and say, well, they're this, they're this, and they're that, and so forth, that's different than saying, this person is doing something that I feel is very, very detrimental to Srila Prabhupada's movement. In other words, in the explaining of the situation, there's a difference there between making offense and simply trying to educate or turn others away from that path that you see that is deviant. You understand? If someone is deviating what he should be doing, and we present that, it's not blasphemy. Actually, the trick is to enter into a discussion of it without becoming ridiculously condemning. We have some devotees here that are ridiculously condemning when they attack an issue. And they make it personal. It's called ad hominem argument. This is wrong because this person is stupid and ridiculous and so forth and so on. This is not wrong because of that. It's wrong because of respect for God. So in order to get beyond that, one has to hone his argumentative, his discussive, his communication skills. Otherwise, on a low level, yes, it is offensive to someone who's blaspheming. How do they go on? How does Krishna tolerate? Krishna tolerated probably Ashwatthama, 100, Sushupal for 100 insults, 108 insults, 101. He didn't remember right. I don't know what 49 is. Anyway, it requires some skill to discern it, whether you're being obnoxious or blasphemous, or you're being, you try to be creative and constructive. Constructive criticism as well. But you have to work with that. That's something you have to work with. That's a skill you have to work with. By the time he got a page. Thank you for tolerating. Hare Krishna.